You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join Coach C, a USA Strength and Conditioning Hall of Famer, every Monday night to see in a variety of guests, including former players, former and current coaches, pastors, and others will discuss relevant issues in coaching today's athlete, with the goal of equipping the athlete and those coaching them with the physical, mental, and spiritual armor necessary to live their best life. Here's Coach Connors.
Welcome to Absolute Empowerment. I'm Coach Jeff Connors, and tonight with us we have Dr. Pat Ivey, who we are very privileged to have in the house. Dr. Ivey is an assistant vice president, associate athletic director for health and performance at the University of Louisville. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ivey.
Coach Connors, it's a pleasure to be with you.
Yes, sir. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of give you a couple objectives first in relationship to, I guess you could say, my mission with this show. And the first one would be to bring on highly accomplished people with a meaningful testimony of faith through adversity. And so kind of what we want to do is learn a little bit more about you, maybe that people don't know, in relationship to young Pat Ivey growing up, how you got interested in athletics, who were your influences, and tell us a little bit about maybe some of the things that you had to overcome to be successful.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm going to have to go back a ways, I guess.
Yes, sir.
Coming from Detroit, Michigan. Uh-huh. I was the son of two Southern parents that grew up in the South. Excuse me. My dad was a blue collar worker, worked at Chrysler, worked in the factories, retired as a truck driver. My mom stayed at home and made sure we were taken care of because it was not the easiest time out in the city there in Detroit, Michigan. But academics was something that was always stressed by my parents. My mom always made sure we got our work done. She was always at the school. And so for me, education was drilled into my head, the power and importance of education. I obviously got interested in sports, and there's a long story there as well. Having good parents doesn't necessarily make it an easy life for an inner city kid. You know, it's typically the ones that don't have the best upbringing kind of run and dictate how things go in the neighborhood. So for me, coming from that sort of environment really set me up to be the target of a lot of people and around my age in the neighborhood. So my mom knew that she could only take me so far. My dad can only take me so far. They thought that sports would be and football would be an avenue for me to learn how to basically have some self-confidence within myself, learn some toughness, some work ethic, be around some older, productive kids my age, and be led and mentored by some coaches that were strong and positive influences. So that's how I got started. I got started playing football, eventually went to high school, went to Cass Technical High School, which is downtown Detroit, Michigan. And academics, like I said, was a big part of what I was a part of. And then went to college, and I wanted to play college ball. I was going to be a defensive end, so I had the size, I had the speed, I had the tenacity, and I knew academically I could handle it. So I chose the University of Missouri, played there, had a chance to play professional, played for four different NFL teams, the Chargers, Lions, Broncos, and Packers. And then I got into coaching. As a matter of fact, I started as a graduate assistant at the University of Missouri, working with Dave Tobe, Donnie Summer, Bob Jones. While I was still a professional athlete, I was a graduate assistant. So either interning or a graduate assistant, because I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to coach. I wanted to make an impact on young people the way my coaches did in Little League, on East Side, Cowboys, Cass Tech, technicians, Coach Roland. So these men were very strong, influential in my life, and that's something I wanted to do to give back. So I became a college strength and conditioning coach, did that for a long time, and then knew I wanted to get into administration, and that's where I am now.
Gotcha. We'll talk a little bit more about your career in strength and conditioning. Of course, that's how I met you. And, you know, I was always glad to see you at the conferences because you were always very cordial and friendly. And I always appreciate you. And it was great to see you at Ohio State here recently. So with this podcast, I don't know who my next interview is going to be. I just kind of let God lead me a little bit. But I'm very appreciative to have you on. And so in relationship to your experience with strength and conditioning, what were some of the things that you learned about athletes or some of your experiences that kind of led you kind of in a little bit of a different direction in relationship to different ways to influence them, even beyond being a strength and conditioning coach?
That's a really good question. By having coaches that knew the importance of sport in our lives, where I came from, like they knew it was bigger than sport. It was bigger than football. It was bigger than what happened on the field. They knew that what they were doing was going to impact lives. And then that was very apparent from high school, same thing. The head coach there, we would actually have to get in line and show him our report card. And if you had any D's or F's, it was not going to be a good day for you.
Yeah.
So that instilled in me the importance of academics, to the point that even when I was a strength and conditioning coach, when grade reports came out, I would tell my coaches, I'm not coaching today. I'm talking to each one of these players about their grades. And I would have their grades and I would say, explain to me what's going on here. You know, if you had a 3.5, explain to me, coach. Yeah, I've got to get that 1B up. Like, good, get that 1B up. You should be about a 3.7. You know, all the way to the one that had a few of those not so good grades, few D's, few F's. Like, you got to explain this to me. And so, just knowing that this is bigger than football, this is bigger than sport. What was instilled in me by my mom and dad, by my coaches, the type of coach that I wanted to be. And I had an experience as a young coach that I did not want any of my assistants to experience. And so I made a promise and I actually prayed. I made a prayer. I said, God, if I want to be a director of strength and conditioning, and if I treat any of my assistants the way I'm being treated, then take it all from me. I don't need it. I don't want to do it. And the same thing goes for if I mistreat any of the athletes, it needs to go. And I knew that I would not break that promise because of that pact I made, that if I didn't treat people right and with respect, that it would all be taken away. But I wanted that accountability because I wanted to be the best version of me that I could be. I wanted to be the type of coach that I wanted when I was an athlete. So I had coaches that I wanted. Then by the time I got to college, I had some coaches that I didn't want to replicate and be around or want anything to do with. And so I had both versions. I had versions of coaches that I wanted to emulate, and I had versions that I will never do those things to my staff or the athletes that I work with. And so that drove me for many years.
Right. Well, you know, I think everybody knows that we're all, you know, we all have been in a very tough profession, a very vulnerable profession. And, you know, I've seen so many coaches through my career go by the wayside and then, you know, I never hear from them again. I've got some of those guys. And then, you know, I was very fortunate to, you know, survive 7 head coaches. And then basically when I got out, fortunately, I was financially secure, but, you know, I was too old to go find another job. So I started to have, you know, I had this podcast, but I want to give you a couple more objectives of what I'm trying to do here. The second one, and I also have a website called armoredlife.org and kind of a armored life team of former, you know, players that are now pastors, who I have tons of respect for, and I've had on my podcast, along with the guys that I coached that were played in the league and so forth, and also coaches. But to create pathways of resolution and success for the troubled athlete, this is when I first retired, and I thought, you know, I got a little spot down at the beach, and, you know, it's going to be nice. Maybe I'll just go down and go fish and play a little bit of golf. And then all of a sudden, something hit me in the side of the head and said, you know, how many players did you see not make it to their senior year? How many players by the wayside for one reason or another? And some reasons a lot more common than other reasons. And, you know, I'm going to go through the list with you today, but now, these are things that really bothered me during my career. But being so busy, I really didn't know how I could help, you know, in some respects. I was, you know, trying to win the next game. But, you know, just to see guys, you know, I know that I saw 150 people leave a program for smoking marijuana, you know, just and I bring that up all the time because it just it's something that I think about a lot, you know, because there, you know, a lot of those guys were very good football players. And so where all that's concerned, give me a little bit of your opinion, you know, your experience with regard to the troubled athlete.
Yeah, that's, I think any coach that wants to be the best coach they can be wants to reach every athlete on the team. Yeah. And that's your all-star athlete, your yes sir, no sir athlete, all the way to the one that doesn't understand their shoes need to be tied and socks need to be properly pulled up and pants and all those things. And you want to reach every one of them. And sometimes the ones that are the hardest to reach present the most challenge, but also we know the most rewarding once we get them to see the light.
Right.
And I think, you know, coach, I think that's what I think of when I think of you. So when I spoke to you at a conference, you were someone that I recognized. You were trying to reach every athlete. We can talk about playlists and songs, and you would say, hey, if you got some playlists for me, get them to me, because I know that was important to you. You were trying to make sure you reached every one of your athletes. And if there were songs out there, you know, that you could play in the weight room that could get a young man's attention, then you knew you could had a better chance to win that athlete. So that's what it's about. It's about how can you win each one of those athletes over? Because you need them to be the best version they can be as an athlete. So because we need to win games. Yes, we want to keep our job, but you've been doing it and I have been doing it long enough that we gotten return on the investment, meaning those young men would come back to the weight room and we would see what they had become. We would see their families. We would see the jobs that they would hold, how they would take care of their families financially. Like we were able to do it long enough to be able to see it. And we were doing it long enough to be able to know the ones where we poured and invested so much into, we got to see that product. And that's what kept us going. And that's what keeps you going, wanting to do this podcast. That's what keeps me going, wanting to be the guest on your podcast, because there are still people to reach and there are athletes that still need to hear our voice.
Well, I really, you know, I have a lot of respect for, and I guess I'm trying to figure out how to express this, but when a strength coach like yourself finds another avenue to stay in a position to influence people somehow, you know, I mean, it's some degree good fortune, but it's how you pursued your education. It's how you pursued your contacts and relationships with people. They would have created positions for you that are very meaningful. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for you for what you've accomplished. I can't even name all the titles you've had different places. I mean, I went through your bio and I was like, I'm going to have to let him talk about his bio because, you know, it's too deep for me. But and I think there's some other people across the country that are, you know, have kind of gravitated to those positions. And so I think it's just really good for the profession. Like, if you, okay, if you don't win enough games, okay, well, they want to bring in a new regime. Okay, you're out. It's really nice when they can find a place for you if you really have a passion and desire to help young people. And I hope more of that occurs across the country in programs where people can actually, you know, find these types of, or create these types of positions, because strength coach, you know, you're in the trenches all day long. You have a ton of insight in relationship to, at least a lot of strength coaches have a lot of insight in relationship to how to continue to relate to people beyond just sets and reps. And, you know, and I personally took that very seriously my whole career. But props to you, man, in what you've accomplished and what you've actually created as far as, maybe a potential avenue for other strength coaches in the future as well. So I think it's awesome.
Well, I appreciate that.
I'll just give you a couple other objectives to the podcast. Want to collect specific information from former athletes and coaches that has meaningful impact for current athletes. So with regard to these podcasts, you know, I'm trying to, I want to get more young people to listen to some guys that have had experience as NFL players, as NFL coaches, collegiate coaches, whatever, so that they can get more insight in, you know, the things that are important and how they can continue to be successful. And, you know, when you talk about those things, you're looking at choices, relationships, and also things such as loyalty, integrity, and humility. And even with the way it is now with, you know, all the new stuff that came down the line with money, I guess that loyalty is still important, although I can't blame somebody for wanting to make some money. But at the same time, you know, you have to have a certain degree of loyalty to a program, you know, as well, I think. So it's a tough deal. You know, it's challenging, you know. So, but beyond my primary objective is to be a resource for a new or renewed spiritual commitment with regard to a collegiate athlete specifically. Because I think a lot of times, you know, we put our spiritual life on timeout when we go to college. And, you know, I'm to the point now, I don't work for a university. So if I want to talk about Jesus Christ, I'm going to do it. And that's what I've been talking about. So, you know, I really believe that it's extremely important for a collegiate athlete to have a spiritual life. And, you know, just have a good foundation for making great choices, and that way, you know, get to graduation, be successful, listen to the right people, make the right choices. So, and you know, I'm pretty much assuming these are the things that you talk about with athletes all the time.
Absolutely, I think faith, and you know, we know we have to be careful in these, especially at a public institution, sure, about how you go about it, but you know that faith is important. You know that spirituality, a person's spirituality is important, and they may have different backgrounds and where they're from. And I think it's important to respect those different backgrounds, yep, respect those different spiritual preferences and where people are coming from. I can tell you here at the University of Louisville, Chris Morgan, who heads up our FCA program, I've never seen anything like it. He has, on average, 200 to 300 student athletes at each one of his meetings.
Right.
And he's got a staff of unbelievable people. Like, he's got a diverse staff, so athletes can see different backgrounds and genders, ethnicities, so they can see people that they can relate to. So that's pretty cool that can happen at a public institution. But we know that athletes need something beyond what they receive in just normal society. We know that we're focused on their nutrition and their strength and conditioning. We want to make sure they're good socially. We want to make sure they're the mental side. That's become a big part, mental health and mental performance. But the spirituality of an athlete is important. And a lot of them, that's how they grew up. And then once they get to our campus, if we're not encouraging that they continue to do or be a part of what made them successful, then I think we fall short. And we want to make sure that we can encourage that they can continue to grow as a person in every facet.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, you know, there's a large number of athletes that I coached, you know, came from certain homes. And, you know, I talked to Rod Coleman, played in the league about 9 years ago. I coached Darrell Williams, I talked to here recently, the D-line coach for the Titans. And, you know, he came from South Central LA. Rod came from Philly. And, you know, we were talking a lot about strong grandmas and, you know, how impactful strong grandmas are. You know, what is your perspective in relationship to is there some program promoting fatherhood? Is there some program like what do you do in your program? Do you talk about that at all in your program?
Let me go backwards a little bit and talk about my time at the University of Missouri. Something Gary Pinkel, who was just inducted into the National Football Hall of Fame this past December, something that he had acknowledged and come to the realization on is that there was a widening gap of players on the team with those who came from households and backgrounds with strong male figures, whether it's an uncle or a father or a grandfather, and then those that didn't. And I noticed it as well. And we had the conversation that we need to do something different for those players that come from those sorts of backgrounds where they didn't have that sort of presence in the home. Because when they get here and they're listening to us give out instructions in, we're talking a language about discipline and accountability and attention to detail, and it's coming from us, it's not being received like it should be based on athletes that may have come from a background where they have been used to hearing that sort of voice. And so he asked for help. Like, how are we going to do this? We need to identify who these athletes are early in the program and then come up with some sort of programming that can give them what they need. And so I think that is still very relevant today. I think we do need to do a better job. We need to do a better job of onboarding freshmen as they come, transfers as they come. But I think some sort of program, we need to go even farther. And I agree with you. Something that we can do to talk about what fatherhood is and what it means to us and maybe share our stories, I think can go a long way with our student athletes.
Well, I think about one young man all the time who I asked him to come to my office once a week and talk to me. And we talked about, you know, everything from when he was growing up and all the things that he went through and so forth, because he was struggling. He was troubled, but he was like my, you know, MVP of strength and conditioning testing. You know, I mean, he was that guy and played defensive back. And then, you know, after he had graduated or left the program, you know, maybe a year later, he got gunned down in a parking lot of a mall, you know, and as I don't know, maybe 23 years old. I still think about that a whole lot. Think about, you know, is there anything I could have said different? Is there something I could have done? You know, I mean, but so, you know, those are the types of things that really, you know, motivate me to do something like this, because I still, you know, that still hits me hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I know there's people out there that we can help.
Yep.
And so, kind of moving down the line here, and just talking about a few other things. How about the impact of playing time, or let's say not getting playing time? Do you counsel with people there?
You know, that has continued to evolve and change. You now have parents who want more input at a higher level, meaning college, yeah, into playing time. You have these services out there now that are, you know, you used to have to wait until the day after a game to get your grade on how you played from your coach. Maybe it was posted in the locker room before you had the meeting, so you knew how you graded out with your percentage, yeah, of whether at the point of attack or whatever, making plays or mistakes. Well, they've got these services out now that are over the internet, and they're giving you a grade on how you played. So how do you as a coach combat, wow, what you're hearing, what your player – your athletes are being told either on Twitter, internet, social media, these other services, parents, NIL agents, all these, you know, everyone is has an opinion out. Everyone has access to, you know, these chat rooms. Like there's a lot to navigate as a coach. And I think what we can do better is teaching our athletes distraction control. What's a distraction? Like, can any of these things and any of these opinions actually change your level of competence and confidence so that you can go out and execute and make these plays that you need to make? Because if you make plays, you're going to get playing time. Like, that's, yeah, what it comes down to. You do your job and you do, yeah, it consistently well, you're going to get playing time. And I think a lot of them have had people, so many people involved in their path up until they get to college, that those people are still in place and still want to have a voice with that athlete and have had that. It makes it really difficult for a coach. And, yeah, I think what you have to do is set boundaries. You have to set guidelines. All right, this is how I will interact with your parents. I expect you to be a young adult. I expect for you to be someone who knows how to communicate, someone who knows how to be accountable. And if you have any issues, let's deal with it. But it's not easy.
Right. Well, let's move on to, I guess, another elephant in the room for the last 50 years, you know, alcohol in the club. So Steve Logan, was kind of interesting back in the, you know, the early 90s when I was at East Carolina, you know, the head coach decided his own parties at hotels and hire a DJ and require people to come there instead of downtown. So that was an interesting sequence of events. And, you know, but you do what you got to do to, you know, to keep people out of trouble. But do you think we're doing better with that in educating athletes to kind of avoid those situations where, you know, there's going to be trouble?
I think so. I think, yeah, we are. And I don't know if we have to do as much education as their lived experiences tell them that what they do is probably going to be captured in some kind of way, because everyone has a cell phone that has a camera on it. There are cameras everywhere. There are Ring cameras, security cameras. You can't go anywhere, just really anywhere, without someone knowing or being able to prove that you were there. So I think they've learned, and I think that is something that has maybe hurt them socially. Because what we used to do back in the day, when you had a little bit of stress, you say, I'm going to go what? Blow off what? Some steam.
Yep.
Right. Like, how you go blow off steam now? Like, right. Someone's going to have a camera right in your face while you're blowing off steam. How does that look? Like,
yeah.
If someone would have recorded us blowing off steam back in the day, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Like, and so I think we don't have to do as much education with them on what are the social ramifications of you making a mistake. I think what we want to spend more time doing is in the privacy, in your own privacy, making sure you're making the best decisions, because I don't think they can go out to the club like we used to go out, like even 15 years ago. So I think educating them on the consequences and what happens when you do drink alcohol. We used to have an equation. We would, it was one equals two equals five. And one equals two means one night of drinking is going to cost you 2 days of recovery.
Yeah.
Two nights in a row is going to cost you five. So I'll let you all do the math and you figure out how you want to do this. So hopefully if they did do something, it may have been for one night, not two nights in a row. And maybe we used to also educate them, hey, drink water too. Like, yeah. I'm going to keep it real with you. I know you all are going to go out. One equals what? Two equals what? Five. Drink water too. And then I think that helped a lot of the athletes that, and I had a really good nose as well. Like I could smell something, get you nice and sweaty and lathered up. Hey, bring it in real close, real, real close after we've gotten after it in the warm up. And you're going to be able to pick something up.
Yeah. Don't forget the burn marks on the lips either, you know.
I've looked at fingernails before. I've looked at your eyes, they're an organ. Your lips are an organ. So if you're putting certain things in, your organs have to get those toxins out, and they're going to be discolored or they're going to look dehydrated. So I would use all of that to, and it's not to embarrass an athlete. It is to let them know, hey, the decisions you're making are detrimental to your performance and your progress.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I asked you for those playlists, cause, you know, back when I played was in the, you know, late 70s, it was Earth, Wind and Fire, you know, all those, you know, when we went out, all we did was dance, you know, like for 4 hours. So, you know, it was like another workout by the time we got home. So that's how that went. But things have changed a lot.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
So how about managing the daily schedule? This is something that, you know, always intrigued me in relationship to how many things these guys had to do in the course of a day with regard to study hall and, you know, of course, early morning lift. And then if you had winter conditioning, and then you had lifting after winter conditioning, and then, you know, you had classes and so forth, then you try to eat sometime. Do you all have an intricate plan there to help folks?
I think that's one of the benefits of technology, is that you're able to kind of plan out, help someone stay organized and you know, using the use of calendar. We use what we call Teamworks. In Teamworks, you can enter your class schedule, study hall times, and any other anything else you want to enter. I spoke to a group of athletes a few years ago, and they wanted to know, how do you stay better organized? And I don't think they asked that, but they talked about having so many things to do. And I asked them about what is their organizational processes. And I would say, hey, show me, everyone has a phone. Show me where on your phone, where you have to be and what you have to get done. And they couldn't do it. I was like, what's the point of having it? So this one athlete who's very successful had three different calendars, a calendar that the team had sent, a calendar, for the academics sent, and then his own calendar, and none of them synced up. So they athletes were finding themselves double booked and not knowing it. So I think if we can teach them time management, how to best plan out your day, what I would do is I would pick every year, I would pick two every, you know, going into the summer, I would pick two or three athletes that I knew had their stuff figured out. And yeah. I would have them get with someone on staff and put an Excel spreadsheet that showed their schedule from Sunday to Saturday, when they woke up, when they had breakfast, lunch, dinner, when they had snacks, when they went to sleep, when did they take a nap, when did they train, lift, class, study hall. And we would put that up on the board, and you would just see athletes just studying it, because these were going to be our future draft picks. Right. Like, this is what he does. And athletes would be like, coach, can I get a copy of Xavier's schedule? It was amazing to see. And I said, hey, if you all need help and you want your schedule, you want to plan it out, you know, sit down with one of the coaches. We can help you with that. And so just doing little things like that, I think, make a big difference.
Right. Yeah. And of course, you know, especially since attending the clinic at Ohio State and looking at all the different restoration methods, high level restoration methods and high level research, of course, being done there with regard to that. Sleep, of course, being one of the primaries, and that's something people have been talking about here for the last few years. Every athlete there having the Aura Ring, which I guess provides all kinds of different feedback to them and to the coaching staff and so forth. And you know, this is good stuff. And, you know, I kind of was in my head when they first start talking about readiness. And, you know, does this mean, like, as coaches, we have to change our program for people if we think that, like, they're not ready? You know, because back in the day, the whole resolution was, well, if I didn't think you slept well, I'd work you that much harder to remind you to sleep tomorrow night. So it's a little different now. So how much does this information actually impact the training prescription for that day or that week? Or, you know, well, how's that work?
I tried to go that route with Coach Pinkel. And he said, so these athletes are doing more than they have the ability to recover from? And I said, yes. He said, well, they just need to do all the stuff that you're telling them to do. If they need to be eating right, sleeping right, hydrating right, that's on them. And I couldn't argue with him. Like, yeah, coach, you're right. So that was the last time I went to him about asking if we could manage any sort of load or anything like that. You know, that was on the players. Now, we did use the Omega Wave system, which did look at readiness and different biological systems and HRV and things like that. And we had one particular athlete. He was a junior college transfer. We didn't bring in too many. We would bring in maybe two, no more than three junior college players. Yeah. And this athlete was a future first round draft pick. And we were going to have him. He had three to play three. He ended up playing two, coming out as a junior. And we had him in season. After the first game, we put him on the Omega Wave. And we were only testing about 10 of our players, 10, 11, because it takes time and you got to put them in a room and quiet room and all that stuff. And we said, hey, you're red. It was a Sunday. Like, it's red, yellow, green. You're red. Most of your teammates are yellow. And I said, look, I'm not going to ask you what you did after the game because I know what you did during the game. I'm not going to ask you what you did after the game. What I am going to say is whatever you did put you further behind than the rest of your teammates to recover. So I'm guessing it's going to be you. So your Sunday's gone, your Monday's gone, your Tuesday's gone. You might recover by Wednesday. Yeah. And he said, you can tell that? I said, yes. I said, look, this is between us. But if you, with your potential, if you continue like that, you won't be who you can be. You won't be the player you can be. And he said, Coach, that'll never happen again. I said, it's on you.
Yeah.
After that, we tested him every Sunday. He came back the most ready out of any of his teammates. For, he was playing at a first round draft pick level. There were times he would come back at green on Sunday. We're like, how did you do that? Like, I said, look, that's cool. However, I was like, look, do me a favor. You're a very influential person on this team. Talk to your teammates that might be coming back in the red. Let them know what's going on and tell them how you're coming back in the green, because we can't put everybody through this. But you've got the influence and you know. And sure enough, I mean, we had a pretty good year.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've run into some interesting characters along the way. At UNC, I had a kid that was a defensive back that he went and played in the league probably 4 or 5 years with two teams. And I think he showed up a lot of days still inebriated and would go out and win every rep somehow, whether it was a 400 or 200, it didn't matter. He was going to win. So the kid just amazed me. But every once in a while, you'll find somebody like that.
Yep.
So I had Dr. Rick Perea on, you know, and I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Perea, but, you know, he's got a podcast. He's a sports psychologist, real big into this stuff, worked with the Broncos and the Dolphins and so forth, but really had a lot of points relative to marijuana to – you know, support the fact it's very destructive, you know, even though it's been legalized several places. But how do you educate the athletes with regard to that? And obviously it's still against the NCAA rules, correct?
It is. And it becomes more difficult because I think a year ago, they raised the limit from 35 nanoliters to 150. So basically saying that you can still do something or be around it and still not be above the threshold. So that coming from the NCAA sends kind of a mixed message. Yeah. And, you know, then there's the legalization of it. Then is it medicinal? I think for us, there's education out there. You can talk to them, but Here, let me give you an example. So I went back to school to get my doctorate in sports psychology. And so I started studying different aspects of the brain and how it works and how you could get the most out of your physical body. And we decided we would try something during training camp. We found a 3-minute meditation, mindfulness guided meditation. And I was thinking to myself, these guys are probably going to laugh us out of the weight room. I said, but you know what? I'm willing to try it. So after practice, we would come in and lift. And lifting during training camp, you know how it is. It's high intensity, moving around. I want you in and out in 15, 20 minutes. Hit the shower, and then you probably got lunch or meetings or something like that. So I said, I'm going to take 3 minutes. All right, everybody upstairs. We turned the lights off. Everybody lay back. We had some turf up on the balcony in the weight room. And for 3 minutes, they went through this guided meditation. And it ended. And they were still laying down. And we were like, what do we do? Like, I don't know. Hey, guys, you got to get up and go, you know, hit the shower. You got meetings. And some of them had fallen asleep in less than 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And I just stood there as they were passing by, getting ready to go down the stairs. And they were just kind of like, just still floating. I'm like, wow, what's going on? And then the guys that I know, the smokers, I know, I know they came up to me like, Coach, we got to do that every time. I was like, what is it? They're like, Coach, man, we need to do that in the afternoons before we go to meetings too. I'm like, okay, yeah, yeah, sure, absolutely. And it taught me what they were seeking and trying to find shortcuts to serenity. They found in those 3 minutes in that guided meditation.
Yeah.
What they were trying to do is reduce the stress. They were trying to get in the present. And that 3 minutes got them there. And I know that there were athletes that probably looked for more positive options that wouldn't be detrimental to their career because of opportunities that we exposed them to, such as guided meditation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you think that, how do you feel about, I mean, do you feel like that it damages the brain or not?
Oh, I think it does something. I don't know if we've done enough research on it. I don't know what threshold. I don't know, Coach. I mean, I know too much of anything is bad. I don't know what too much is for anybody. Yeah. I can't say that just because somebody took a couple of puffs, they've got brain damage. Like, I don't, I don't think I can, I've seen anything where I can say that. So I would just say there are other, whatever you're trying to accomplish by smoking, are there other options?
When you look at all the different factors that affect an athlete, all the different things that we've mentioned, and you know, and I've got probably a list of 10 more I could mention, but what do you want to attack first in relationship to helping someone to be successful? When you look at all these different things, where do you want to put your money?
As far as like developing athletes?
Well, as far as, you know, we could talk about alcohol education, drug education, the daily schedule, money management, not becoming angry because you're not getting playing time and go jump in the portal.
Yep.
I mean, you know, what?
I actually wrote a book, Coach.
Attack first.
I wrote a book called The Table, and in it is for student athletes. Yeah, in it is for student athletes, and I talk about choices, choosing your identity, choosing your path, choosing your friends, career choice, education. Then the second theme is character development, so personal development, leadership development, relationships. I talk about money and wealth. My wife actually wrote the chapter on personal finance. She's a professor. Investments by former strength coach. Then the final theme is living life after sports, focused family, and passing the baton to teach others. So I would say if I'm going to put all of my chips in one area, it is going to be on mental performance. It is going to be teaching someone the skills of how to think right. It is going to be, how can I teach you how to be in the present, how to choose positive self-talk over negative self-talk, what is confidence, what's concentration, intensity management, like breath control. I'm going to teach them how to do that because that's going to transcend life.
Right. I like it. I need to get a copy of that.
It's coming. I got you.
All right. So I guess we got a little bit of time left here, but I want to talk about your family.
Oh man, I appreciate it. And that's the reason, family is the reason why you and I are connected, because we saw each other a few weeks ago at the Ohio State Strength and Conditioning Clinic. My oldest daughter goes to Ohio State. She's studying animal science. And yes, I saw that conference come across my email maybe on Wednesday. And I thought, wow, it's in Columbus. Opportunity to go spend some time with my daughter. And I said, hey, do you want to go to the conference with me? If she had said no, I don't think I would have went.
Yeah.
I went because I wanted to spend some time with her and I wanted her to have a new experience. This is, you know, she doesn't necessarily want to be a strength and conditioning coach, but she wants to train large animals. She wants to work with large animals. So, you know, some of us can be like that and some athletes can be like that. But it was a good experience for her. She's so hardworking, so bright, and it was good just to spend some time with her. I picked her up from her dorm. We went to the conference. We had lunch. And then I dropped her back off at the dorm right after lunch. And I drove back here to Louisville. My youngest, she is a senior in high school. She just completed her first book. So she wants to be a novelist. She wants to be an author. Talented crocheter. I don't understand how she does what it is that she does. She can make anything. And my wife, we've been, wow, it's March already. So this month we'll be married for 26 years. Wow. We met in college. We've been together for 30 years. These ladies in my life are just, man, they're my everything. My mom and dad are still together. They've been married for 52 years coming up in August. And we talk in some kind of form all the time. And then, you know, I've got sisters and younger sister, older brother. So, man, yeah. I've been blessed. I've got an awesome family, so supportive. Man, we're so encouraging for one another. And that's where my strength comes from, is doing everything for them.
Well, I talked to your daughter a little bit. She seemed to be very sweet. And my wife is someone who loves animals. And I just think there's something special about people who love animals because, you know, you can tell right away they have a big heart, you know. Yep. So, you know, we got a bunch of them here at my house. So I try to find a place, you know, in my bed, you know, where I got enough room to sleep at night. We got two more dogs in there, so.
Yeah, we've got the dog, and they want another one. I'm like, I keep voting no, but I keep getting outvoted, so we'll see.
Well, before we wrap it up, just tell me a little bit about your typical day, and you know what you're doing with your particular occupation.
Oh wow, no day is the same. So obviously health and performance, and that is, so I'm the designated healthcare administrator. That means that, the team physicians report through that position, that designation. I oversee sports medicine, sports nutrition, sports performance, sports science, mental health, mental performance. I have an administrative assistant, so I oversee 55 people. Full-time people. That doesn't include seasonals. That does not include graduate assistants or interns. Right. It doesn't include any of those. And it's a big job. It's the largest department in the athletics department. So, and we know the type of people that work in those, but they're hardworking, dedicated, and really, really intelligent. So my job is to make sure they have what they need. And right. And that takes a lot. It takes a lot of communication, coordination. We say we have three C's, care, communicate, collaborate. And so if you care, I want you to care about yourself, because if you don't take care of yourself, it's hard to take care of anyone else. Communicate and be a better communicator every day. Verbal, written, body language, it all matters. Collaborate. If you care, and you communicate, collaboration is going to happen. But that all leads to what we call comprehensive integration. And that is, do we have all of the services and are they all interconnected? Right. And that's important. Your athletes want to know if your strength coaches are talking to nutritionists are talking to the athletic trainers are talking to the sports scientists, talking, the mental health people are talking to the team doctors. Like, it's, we've all got to be connected and on the same page. So my day starts with emails, text messages early in the morning. I wake up and get a walk. I walk my dog. I get a walk and a jog, come back, hit the sun, hit the gym. I've got a home gym right here. And then I make breakfast, shower. Then I'm out the door. I'm making phone calls, emails before I get to work. I have to prepare for a Monday on a Sunday. I put all my agendas together early Sunday morning for the week. I go through my schedule. I spend probably half a Sunday morning doing all of that. Monday, I start off, I meet with the mental health staff. I'll stop by those offices. I'll meet with my administrative assistant, go through my agenda for the rest of the week. And then I'll meet with our nutrition of ops to make sure she has everything that she needs. Then I get to my, then I go to my office.
Right.
So and once I get to my office, it's about 10 o'clock now. I'll meet with my supervisor and I'll go through the agenda that I prepare that I send her on Sunday. I'll go through the entire week. We'll go through the things that I need her assistance on and I'll go back to my office and then I'll start banging out whatever we had on the agenda. Lunch, and then there's meetings for the rest of the afternoon. Tuesday, a little bit more of the same. I'll have my health and big health and performance meeting with all my directors at 11 o'clock. I make sure I schedule lunch every day. And then there's more meetings in the afternoon. By same thing. So Wednesday morning, I'll have the senior staff meeting or our leadership meeting that alternates every other week. And then usually by that afternoon, I can finally start to get out to practices, get to the weight rooms, see some athletes, see the people that I supervise. And that's usually my Wednesday. Thursday is probably meetings with the hospital system, campus, people in the community. That's usually Thursday. Then Friday morning, I'll do my personal business before I leave the house. Like I've got pativy.com and things like that. And then I'm an adjunct professor as well. So I take care of that stuff usually mid Friday morning. Then I'll get to campus. This Friday, I'll travel with the men's basketball team. So I'll probably get to campus afternoon, travel with the team that evening. We got game day on Saturday. I'll get back Saturday night. Sunday, we've got a group of developers that'll be here. So I'll show them on a campus tour, take them to dinner on Sunday night, and wake up Monday morning, do it all over again.
I want to congratulate you on all your success and the wonderful role model you are for other people in the profession. And, and it's still a pretty tough profession, but I'm really glad to see people getting paid now, like they should be getting paid.
Yes.
And, so it's been really great, great seeing you at Ohio State and getting up with you again. And hey, let's stay in touch.
Absolutely. Appreciate you, Coach. Thank you for everything you've done in the profession. Thank you for continuing to be a role model for coaches like me. Because we need this. We need this avenue. We need this community. We need this fellowship. It's what drove us to be who we were. We're still that. So we still need each other.
Very well stated. Well, hey, this is Jeff Connors signing off for Absolute Empowerment. We'll see y'all next week, and God bless. Thanks a lot. Dr. Pat Ivy.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join us every Monday night for a new edition of the show. Listen to the show pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Be sure to follow us on social media at The Sports OBJ on Twitter and TikTok, at The Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show, and go Pirates!